You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Justice League Dark number 1, Action Comics 1001, Detective Comics 985, Doomsday Clock number 6, Flash number 51, Teen Titans number 20, and The Terrifics number 6. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news, Batman Day has been declared September 15th, 2018.
And what is DC's plans for Batman Day this year?
You know what? I don't know. I didn't have any other details except for the announcement of Batman Day.
Cool. I'm assuming we'll probably get some free Batman comic, or at least a Batman comic out of it.
Yeah, I would think so. Which one? I have no clue.
Right. Yeah. Probably not number 50.
Probably not. But I'm sure we'll be getting more news about that soon. But speaking of something Batman coming out, next bit of news, Batman the Completed Animated Series Deluxe Limited Edition will be available in a Blu-ray box set for $112.99 on October 16th, 2018. And the set includes 109 thrilling episodes, plus two bonus discs containing the films Batman Mask of the Phantasm and Batman and Mr. Freeze Sub-Zero. It also includes an exclusive ensemble of collectibles highlighted by three Funko minifigures, Batman, Joker, Harley Quinn, and seven beautifully designed Lenticular art cards. And the entire box set is housed in a lay-flat book with a slipcase. Pretty cool.
That's a lot. That's a pretty sweet deal. I mean, it's definitely not cheap.
Nope.
But, man, if you can afford that, that is a lot of goodies in there.
Yeah, it sure is. Plus, you're getting the whole animated series, plus Batman Mask of the Phantasm and Batman and Mr. Freeze Sub-Zero. Two movies included in there.
Yeah.
So, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, and for our next bit of DC news, Diane Guerrero, I'm probably butchering that name, from Orange is the New Black, is set for the series regular role of Crazy Jane, one of the leads of DC Universe's live-action series Doom Patrol, from Greg Berlanti. Now, Crazy Jane is an unlikely hero suffering from the world's most severe case of multiple personality disorder. And each of her 64 distinctive personalities manifest a different superpower, making Jane the Doom Patrol's most powerful member, and also its most unstable. Sounds like an interesting character to me.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to checking out this show. It's such a metafictional comic. I am very curious at what it's going to look like in TV form. Like, I can't wait to see what they do with that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And if I remember right, they're supposed to spin out of the Teen Titans series, or supposed to make an appearance on there. So,
and now that we've seen the Teen Titans trailer, it makes even less sense than it did before.
Oh, wait a minute. Is it Teen Titans or Titans?
Titans.
It's just Titans. But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
But anyways, yeah, it'll be interesting, huh?
Yeah, I am legitimately very curious to see what they do with it, and also how it's going to tie into that Titans show. Man, interesting. I'm very intrigued.
I am too. All right, and for our next bit of news, Constantine's City of Demons animated movie release is set for October 9, 2018 on Ultra HD Blu-ray Combo Pack and Blu-ray Combo Pack and Digital. So
I didn't remember this movie was coming out. I'm not going to lie.
I don't remember seeing anything about it.
It must have been announced because they didn't talk about it at Comic-Con. You would think that they would mention it.
Yeah, and I don't remember us talking about it at all, so.
I'm excited. I definitely am going to want to check it out. I totally missed that.
Yeah, and it ties in with the CW Seed series. All right, and for our last bit of news, the Teen Titans Go to the Movie debuted at $10 million at the box office, and its reported production cost is $10 million. So apparently it's made its money back.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. So, just for comparison's sake, Hotel Transylvania 3, which is another kids movie, it made about 12 million that weekend. So Teen Titans Go is able to be a little bit competitive there, budget wise. Now, I mean, it was like Hotel Transylvania 3, for example, or Incredibles 2, have made a lot more money, but they were also marketed much, much heavier and debuted to a much larger theater count than the Teen Titans movie did. So it might not seem like a lot, especially when you talk about normal superhero box office gross, but that's really good for what is essentially a movie for a TV show.
Yeah, and a TV show I never was interested in.
I have only heard really good things about that. I have to admit, the trailer that I saw looked really good, and I've only heard very positive things about the movie. So I didn't I was hoping to maybe check it out this week, but I'm hoping within the next couple weeks to maybe take my little sister to go see it because it looks fun.
So I heard it was good also, and I also heard it had a good rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, it's actually higher than Infinity War.
Higher than Infinity War. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, Rotten Tomato score should never be the be all end all of what a movie is. All it means is that more critics on average enjoyed the Teen Titans movie than Infinity War. Whether that actually means it's a better movie, I have no idea. I haven't seen it yet.
I can tell you, I've also seen the trailer for it, and the trailer looked funny. And when I saw it, I'm like, is this something I should go check out? So, I mean, I've seen the show before on Cartoon Network, and I'm like, what the heck is this? But I gotta admit, the trailer did look funny.
I've also heard there is something that is sort of announced at the end of the credits that has a lot of people really excited too.
Yeah, I noticed somebody posted something on our Facebook group, and I kind of ignored it because I didn't know if I was going to go see it yet or not. So I didn't want to spoil it.
All I'm saying is that what I've heard, if it's something that you're like, oh, I don't know if I should go see this or not, all of the reviews I've seen is that it's very funny. The trailer, in my personal opinion, looked really good, and it's done pretty well financially. And there's apparently something really cool at the end of the movie. So,
Maybe
potential
I'll
reasons to go check it out.
yeah maybe I'll have to take the kids to it. All right, well, that wraps up DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Do you wake up in the middle of the night with cold sweats thinking about professional wrestling?
Have you ever done the Ric Flair strut thinking no one was watching, but they were? Woo!
Have you ever binge-watched 18 hours of The Ultimate Warrior only to want more?
If the answer is yes, then do we have the cure for you?
The Pro Wrestling Roundtable.
We talk about the past, present, and future of professional wrestling, brother.
We review wrestling movies and even jump in a time machine to review past wrestling events.
You can find us on iTunes and www.theprowrestlingroundtable.com.
Also on Twitter at podcastpwr.
Also join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/ESOPro.
We bring the squared circle to the round table.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
let's talk Justice League Dark number one. So, magic is broken as we find out at the beginning of this issue. We see Zatanna try to pull a rabbit out of her hat, and she pulls out a bloody rabbit, and then a monster comes out after it and attacks the audience. I was intrigued.
Not exactly how the trick was supposed to go.
No, but it really got me. It really pulled me into the story because I was wondering what the heck was going on.
Yeah, and they seem to say that it was definitely, at least and somewhat, related to the Tree of Magic.
Yes, from Justice League No Justice storyline. Yeah. Now, Wonder Woman shows up because she's been trying to recruit Zatanna to the new Justice League, the new Justice League Dark, to deal with this new magical problem. So, and as if you guys remember from our review of Justice League No Justice, Wonder Woman was in charge of the mystic group that was trying to deal with that tree. So I thought it was quite a coincidence that Wonder Woman shows up right at the right time, huh?
And then one of the interesting things that they mention after that, Zatanna seems to sort of turn her down, at least at the moment. When she's talking to Detective Chimp later, she says that that's basically what's happened with every magical user that she's gone to, is that they all just keep turning her down, thinking that they can fix it on their own.
Right. We also see John Constantine show up, and he has a talk with Zatanna. And basically, he tells her she has to make a decision on whether she should join Wonder Woman's new Justice League team or team up with a group that her father did and was killed. John Constantine and Zatanna used to date, and I think we've talked about this in the past. But it seemed like John Constantine hinted that he was indirectly responsible for Zatara's death. What do you know about that, Cletus?
I think that that is a new interpretation. Unless that's from a New 52 story that I missed, I really don't remember that being in the Justice League Dark story from that. I think this is a new thing for this story.
That's what I was wondering if it was or not. So
I could be wrong. I could be wrong, but I do not remember that from New 52 stories.
So I wonder if we'll get more explanation on that, or if that's just something that's going to drop right there and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Constantine was his usual abrasive self in that conversation.
Moving on to, you mentioned Detective Chimp. When he's talking with Wonder Woman, we find out he's the new owner of the Oblivion Bar, and that he's taken on the mantle of the Nightmaster. Now, his best friend, I can't remember if they named his name. Oh, Jim. Used to own that bar. And I think we saw him die during Justice League No Justice, if I remember correctly.
And it looked like Detective Chimp had died also, and then he just showed up and was fine with very little explanation.
Or wait a minute, was that during Metal? I can't remember.
It was Metal.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I remember it looked like everybody in that bar died, and then all of a sudden Detective Chimp showed up later and was like, oh, okay, but how?
He used his magical banana.
I don't know. I mean, that was fine, but don't get me wrong. I was not upset that Detective Chimp was alive, but I was just like, well, that doesn't... You need to give me something there. Anyway, yeah, so that's definitely the aftermath for Metal.
Right. One of the lines when Wonder Woman thinks everything's lost or she's ready to leave or something like that, Detective Chimp is like, come on, let's go solve this mystery. And he quoted one of the funniest lines in the issue, which is, they don't call me Detective Chimp because I look pretty.
So that was, I thought that this is a, we talked about this before when we talked about the different rosters that were going to be on these various Justice League titles, but it's such an interesting group that we've got. We have Detective Chimp, we have Man-Bat, it looks like Zatanna and Swamp Thing, possibly Constantine. It's a very interesting mix. It's a really cool, really a lot of like kind of bizarre characters.
Yeah, it sure is. And we also find out that their headquarters is underneath the Hall of Justice, or like in the basement of the Hall of Justice. And
that surprised me. It makes sense. It totally makes sense within the story, but it seemed like they were setting up that bar to be their sort of headquarters. I was like, okay, this is going to be their base. And then it wasn't. I was like, oh, okay.
That does seem weird, doesn't it?
Yeah, they focus, you know what I mean? Like, they focus just a little bit too long on the bar. But it was like, oh, so this isn't going to be a major setting for the show or for the comic?
You know what? I have a feeling this is going to be one of the settings for it. I bet we're going to bounce back and forth between their headquarters and that bar. Because I bet you, how we said the magic people weren't coming there, I bet they start coming there again for some reason.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I wouldn't be surprised if we have a lot more interactions with that bar.
So I have to say, the end of the comic for me was the most unsatisfying part, because it had just I'm really kind of tired of this trope. You have Zatanna coming back to Wonder Woman along with Swamp Thing, saying that magic, something's wrong with magic, of course, and one of us is going to be the one that destroys the world. And it was like, I'm kind of tired of that trope. I don't know about you, but like we've read that a little bit too many times recently.
Yeah, why does the hero have to be the one that's going to destroy everything? Why can't it be the villain for once?
Well, but even more so than that, the whole thing of like the first issue sets up this team and then immediately tells you that one of them is going to be either intentionally or unintentionally a traitor. I mean, I don't know. It's just
you are correct. We've been seeing that way too much lately.
I think I would be, I don't think it would bother me if this was the first one of this that I had read in a long time, but it's not. And so it's sort of like, oh man, again? I think that's sort of the problem.
Yeah, well, we saw this recently in Titans, where somebody was going to betray them. I know we've seen it somewhere else too. But you're right, it's getting old. I am curious what the other kind is. And I'm pretty sure we saw the other kind mentioned in one of the other titles for this week, and I can't remember which one it was.
I don't think it's the same thing. It could be the same thing that we see in Teen Titans. Because there's like a villain or something called the Other, right?
Yeah.
I thought this one was like the Upside Down Man or something like that. I just read these today too. I hope people listening to this that we both sound like we've never read these comics. We just kind of.
And I read
they were,
it.
They were different. They were kind of similar, but I don't remember them being the same thing.
Okay, and I read this last week, so.
I'm almost positive it was something like the Upside Down Man or something like that along those lines, and then the one in Teen Titans was like the Other, or something.
Okay, I just had that written down in my notes, so.
They are similar, so it's possible that they're connected. I don't think they are, but it's possible.
I guess we'll find out, won't we? All right, is this a title you're planning on keeping on reading?
I don't know. It's too early to tell for me personally. Like I will not lie, this was definitely not my favorite comic that we read this week. There were some pages when you had both, like you had the comic spread open, you had some art there, but it was so covered in text bubbles. And I know I've said this before, I know it sounds kind of lazy, like I don't want to read if I've got a comic, but like there is such a thing as too much text in a comic. And I thought there was a number of pages that suffered from that. And I'm hoping that that's just because it's the first issue and he's trying to set all of this stuff up. But I find generally that if you overwrite a comic one time, you tend to overwrite it consistently. So we'll see. There are parts of this that I'm very intrigued by. I love the idea of Justice League Dark as a concept. There was the Jeff Lemire run during the New 52 was really good. I really enjoyed that. But yeah, I don't know. I'll probably need to read it the second issue and kind of decide from there.
Same here. I'm definitely checking out the next issue and see what it's like and see if I want to continue reading it also. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Action Comics number 1001. So we're at 1001 already. The issue opens up and Bendis gives us a recap of what's been happening with the Superman family, The Fires, and The Daily Planet. He gives you everything you need to know for this issue. One thing I noticed he didn't bring up was Rogel Czar, and since he's not even in the story, I'm kind of glad he didn't.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's I like that they're kind of keeping him separate.
I am,
too. At least for now. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there'll occasionally be some crossover, but I like that they're kind of their own different stories.
Right. I mean, things are happening in each story is affecting each story, it looks like, but I was really glad they focused on investigating the fires, because I've been really intrigued by this story.
I agree. And I think the other thing that I really like about that is that I don't think it's fair to essentially demand your reader to be reading both comics. I think just realistically, as a comic publisher, you cannot bank on people reading both. I mean, in all likelihood, many people probably are. But if you're writing your comic that it requires you to be reading two different titles, I don't think that's fair to the customer.
I agree with you there. But it is fun to have them cross over sometimes.
Yes, yeah.
Now, the beginning of this issue, we have... So Superman's investigating the fires when he learns that a boy stated that Superman started the fires. And Superman's like, huh?
He goes and visits the fire chief, and she's the one that tells him that she basically had a witness tell... Which we saw that interaction where the boy goes up to her and says, I saw Superman do it. And we kind of talked about that, being like, well, that doesn't make any sense. I don't like where that story's going. It was such a quick turnaround to immediately be like, oh, yeah, no, somebody paid me off to do that it was like, did you maybe originally have something else in mind and then backtracked? Otherwise, it just seemed like such an unnecessary cliffhanger to me.
I don't think he had anything...
Didn't. It's too quick of a turnaround for him to have changed his mind, but it was just like... I am glad that it's not Superman, but also it was like, it happened so quickly within this issue. It was sort of like, well, what was the point of that cliffhanger? I guess, I don't know. I don't think it generated enough news. You know what I mean? I think people that were picking up Action Comics 101 were just wanting to pick it up because they're intrigued by Bendis starting this run, by the fire mystery story in general. I don't think that cliffhanger is what made people buy this comic.
So if
it's not, then why? You know what I mean?
I think Bendis did it to intrigue you, but who's gonna believe that Superman's starting the fires?
Well, that's exactly. And then he goes, and they make that point repeatedly within this comic, and it was like, yeah, exactly. So why? Why, you know what I mean? Why make it a cliffhanger to one comic into the other? Because people aren't going to believe it. And if they do believe it, it's more of like a, please don't do that. Like,
But we did get a really funny story out of it. At least I thought it was.
No, I like this. I liked the story. I wonder if you could have just had them all in the same issue. I don't know. It's not that big a deal. That was just a question that came to my head when I was reading it.
My guess is he didn't have anything better.
Yeah, that's true. I do. One thing I really like in this, we figure out that it's not. So the kid says a bald dude. And so immediately, of course, Superman assumes that it's Lex.
As I would also.
And we learn that it's not Lex, but Superman doesn't. And so I think that's going to be one really interesting thing that we're going to see, at least for, I would say, at least one, maybe two issues, is sort of Superman clearly thinking that it's Lex, like being very convinced that it's Lex and being wrong.
One thing I thought was very hilarious was you have the kid sitting up in the stand playing his video game or whatever on his phone or whatever he's doing, and Superman just appears, you know, flying right in front of that American flag, and the kid, as soon as the kid notices he's there, he's like, oh crap. He knew he was in trouble, because Superman just doesn't show up to your school. And the fact that he goes, your mother told me where to find you, I thought that was hilarious that he had a talk with his mother first.
Yeah, and on top of that, he's like, well, I mean, this could be your punishment, doing, I think it was, what, community service? Or it could be what your mother asks. You want to know what your mother asks? No, no, no.
I know. That was freaking hilarious.
That was pretty good.
That was good. I love that scene. I found it very hilarious. One of the other things that's going on at the Daily Planet, we see the, I'm going to call her the gossip lady. She is trying to get news out of Clark that Lois left him for Superman.
Yeah, she seems pretty convinced of that, which obviously you know is not true.
We know that's not true because we know they're one and the same. So, but one thing I thought was interesting was as soon as Superman left the Daily Planet, somebody was tracking him. Somebody knows his secret identity, I believe.
That seemed to kind of be what it suggested, right?
Yeah, it suggested
that. They weren't clear about it, but it definitely, yeah, I thought that was hinted at too.
So, I think somebody knows a secret identity, but I'm not sure. Maybe they just think he works at the Daily Planet, or suspect it.
Or they just noticed that, maybe they didn't know that he just left the Daily Planet, but they did notice Superman leaving Metropolis. That was the only other thing. It was either they knew that he is Clark, or they just have a tracking that is able to track that Superman, the superhero, left the city.
Now, I noticed as soon as he left the city, that's when that secret group gathered.
Yeah.
So we have this, some organization. I'm trying to think if I saw the name of the group. I don't have it written down here in my notes, so maybe I didn't. But anyways, this group meets in this house in this water tank thing that's lead lined and soundproof, so it's hidden from Superman. We got this mysterious villain named Mr. Strong. Have you ever seen this character before, Cletus? Is this a new character?
I did not personally recognize anybody.
Okay, so we got a new
I think they're supposed to be new, because part of the thing that with that group was that Superman doesn't even know that any of you exist. So they couldn't, in theory, to me that suggests that none of them are prior villains, because Superman would know about them.
Right. But it sounded like this organization's been around for a little while, the way they were talking.
Yeah.
And we find out that they all have weird names too. We find out the guy named Yogurt is the one starting the fires. And he's also the one that paid the boy to claim that Superman was starting the fires. And Mr. Strong wasn't happy about this. And, of course, they bring in this Red Cloud lady and take care of Mr. Yogurt. He's not going to be a problem anymore.
No.
Now, they were hinting at this Red Cloud being one of the people from the Daily Planet. They even had an article in the back of a lot of the comics this week talking about it. Who do you think Red Cloud is?
So that was one thing that was interesting as I was reading all the comics for this week. A lot of them had that sort of backup feature that was sort of asking you to guess I think they gave four candidates. One was the gossip columnist. One was the other new writer. I can't think of her name. The fire chieftain or Lois, or at least the thing says it's obviously not Lois, but a Lois lookalike.
Yeah.
And so that was the other thing we see at the end of this comic, that Lois, I thought this was not clear enough to me at the end of this comic, is that Lois is back and is working on something, but that clearly she has not let Superman know that she's back in Metropolis.
Right.
I honestly didn't totally understand that scene until I read those backup features and I was like, oh, okay. I thought that was a little too vague.
It was too vague.
I think the problem is, and this is sort of a problem with comics, is when, unlike a movie where you have a person that's cast as a character, so when you see that person, you know it's that character. Just the inherent part of comics, different people draw these characters. And so unless it's somebody wearing an iconic costume, if it's just a woman with black hair typing on a laptop, it's probably Lois, but it doesn't immediately, at least to me, I wasn't immediately like, oh, that's Lois.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But my gut tells me it's not Lois. Where's John? Where's, I'm trying to call him Mr. Oz. Where's Jor-El?
I think it's possible that it is her, and that potentially Jor-El maybe did something to like make her forget. Ooh. And maybe she forgot more than just, you know what I mean?
Make her forget John?
Make her forget John and maybe even just like her entire relationship. And so she just thinks that she's just Lois Lane, early career reporter, basically. Oh.
So she wouldn't even know she's married to Clark or Superman.
Exactly. So Whoa. That's why she wouldn't contact him, because she wouldn't even think to do it. Because as far as she can remember, that she has no, you know, relationship or contact with him.
That would be a big twist and a big villainous move to do against Superman.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I don't know. I don't know that that's obviously, but that was sort of my guess. I was like, I feel like it's too obvious that it's not Lois. I almost think that I can see Bendis going, I think it would be more fun for it to actually be Lois. And then how do you tell that story? So I don't know. That's just my guess. I could definitely be wrong.
Yeah. But that sure is an interesting take on it. That's more interesting than Lois coming back and just being, just hiding from Clark.
He's just being mean.
Yeah.
I agree.
And it doesn't sound like a Lois thing to do, really.
No, not at all.
I'm definitely intrigued by both of Bendis' series of Superman, so definitely going to be reading the next Action Comics.
Yeah, for sure. This is, I would say, the most intrigued by an Action Comics story I've been. They were fine. I thought the Jurgens run was fine for most of it. Like, I don't remember being super excited by a lot of them. The Booster Gold, obviously. But, I mean, even that was sort of a weird story.
Yeah.
It's still Booster, so I liked it, obviously. But this one, I feel like, is frankly, it's a better story. If I remove my Booster tinted glasses.
I have to agree with you on that. All right, let's move on to Detective Comics number 985. I have to say, this one was a better story, too.
We finally got an explanation for the villain. I still don't totally understand the villain's transformation here. I don't totally get. He's clearly a criminal. Batman stops him, but then he somehow still, like, even within that scene where Batman's stopping him, he somehow thinks Batman's a good guy, and then I don't follow, like, I follow what happened. I don't follow the character's thought process that has led him down this path. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't get in his mind when I was reading it. I was like, I don't understand. So he clearly screwed you up on like he really messed you up because of this interaction. And your takeaway from it was, I need him to be more like that guy that stopped me in the past. That was a good thing.
He's clearly messed up in the head.
Yeah, but like, you know what I mean? But like, yeah, very, like, even the Joker, you can kind of sort of see a thought process there. I don't totally follow the villain's thought process, I'm not going to lie. Like, I get it. I get the story. I just don't follow it.
All right. Well, let's give the audience just a tad bit of background here. So at the beginning of this issue, we find Bruce trying to figure out how he knows Karma. And we get the origin story from Batman's memories. Karma was a former gunrunner, tortured parents in front of their children. And to pay him back, Batman doused him with Scarecrow's fear gas and just left him stating, consider this karma. So, and I believe Batman said that the fear gas wasn't going to last forever. So Batman douses him with the fear gas and just leaves him in the desert there.
That was the thing. So you can clearly see this is like an earlier version of a very much more brutal version of Batman. Probably not what Batman would do now. And he even seems to suggest that when he remembers this event, he's sort of like, oh, yeah. I don't understand. I think obviously the story, I don't think that the writer is advocating for Batman to be more like that, but you can kind of see Batman within this story thinking like, oh yeah, maybe he's right. Maybe I do need to be more like that Batman again. And it's like, what, really? Like, we don't need to go back to the 1990s. That's okay.
I think that's a been a theme with Batman for a long time, though. Whether he should have these sidekicks or partners, I mean, they've talked about this theme throughout Batman's history for quite a while, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. It seems like it's more than just whether or not he should have sidekicks. It seems to be also a kind of question on how, like, the level of brutality that Batman should have.
Okay.
You know what I mean? He seems to be advocating. It doesn't seem to necessarily be that Karma wants Batman to not have his allies. It's more that his allies have become, he's forced him to become a softer Batman. So that the reason he's taking the allies away is not necessarily because he shouldn't have them, but because without them, he would be the more kind of hardcore, brutal Batman.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I see what you're saying. His sidekick partners have made him soft. Okay.
Yeah, so yeah. I think so. Like, if he was still a brutal Batman and he had sidekicks, I don't think Karma would care. At least my understanding is that Karma would be fine with that. It's the fact that he now has these sidekicks and now he's not as hard on crime as he once was.
We know that Karma can read minds. I wonder if that was an effect of the Scarecrow's fear gas somehow. They don't really explain it here.
I'm pretty sure it's the helmet. I'm almost positive it's the helmet that he's got.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that helmet. You're right. It was the helmet. It's got some sort of magical ability or something.
Yeah.
One thing you got to say about Karma, he's pretty brutal. We see him shoot a bus driver in the head and hijack a school bus full of children. He also kidnaps a news reporter. And Karma forces the reporter on television, and basically to give Batman a message, he needs to exchange his sidekick partners for the lives of the children. Gives Batman 24 hours to place their bodies in the center of Gotham, and he must break them like he did Karma. Then Karma lights the reporter on fire when she's done relaying the message. It's pretty brutal.
Yeah, he was. He's definitely escalating things for sure.
I'm curious to see what Batman's going to do with that. In another part of the story, we have Black Lightning, who seems unsure of himself and doesn't understand why Batman's hired him to train his sidekick partners when Batman's capable of doing that himself. We have an interesting talk with Alfred. We also find out that we thought he quit his other job. The school thinks he's out with the flu. So I'm glad they cleared that up. I'm really curious to see what Black Lightning's future is in Detective Comics. Is he sticking around, or is he going to be leaving?
I would think so. I would hope so. Because, I mean, his story has been so setup heavy. If he left the title, I mean, what was even the point?
I know, exactly. So, but I'm finding him an intriguing character to bring on to this title. Are you finding this intriguing, or is this a story you didn't really care for?
I'm still kind of on the fence with it. I won't lie. It still has that sort of familiar ring to it. I am intrigued. I definitely am intrigued enough to see the end of the story. I still find myself more intrigued by the potential future of Black Lightning in the comic than Karma himself as a villain.
I'm intrigued as Karma as a villain. And just because of this issue, not because of the last issue. This issue seemed to focus in the story more for me anyways. And I'm also curious about the future of Black Lightning. I do think he's going to be sticking around training the sidekick partners. And I'm hoping they bring more of them on than just the three we have now. So it seems kind of weird to me that Batgirl is part of the group. Since she seems like she has more experience. But
yeah, I don't totally understand why Barbara's in that group. She does not belong there.
Yeah, I think the same thing, especially with what she's doing over in Nightwing right now. So, I mean, she's very smart, trained. She knows her tech stuff. She's helping. I don't know if you've been reading Nightwing, but in the Nightwing storyline right now, she's helping Nightwing with this tech villain that's basically over his head. So, but them working together, it's been a pretty interesting story. So I'm not sure exactly why she's on this team. All right, let's move on to our next title, Doomsday Clock number 6. So In this issue, we get the origin story of Marionette and Mime. We find out
particularly Marionette too.
Yes. We find out that Marionette's father is a puppet maker and he's paying protection money to the police. All right, you know, her father ends up hanging himself because of it, because, you know, they're threatening to take his daughter, so.
Well, and you realize then they make a point that he's, as long as he's alive, he'll never be able to escape their control over him, and so he just chooses that out instead. It was very dark, but it was also very much in that sort of Watchmen kind of darkness. Like, it fit right in with that.
Yeah, it sure did. And then we see Marionette actually kill those crooked officers.
Yeah.
So that was even more brutal.
And that was after she clearly, at minimum, beat up the girl bully that stole her doll.
Oh yeah.
This was good. I really liked this comic, but it was definitely not a happy comic.
Oh no, it wasn't. And then we get Mime's story. I mean, they didn't go into much explanation except that it tied in with Marionette. But those same corrupt cops pushed his mother down the stairwell. We never find out why either.
Yeah, we can assume that it's along the same sort of lines with, you know, the essentially a protection scheme, but yeah.
So.
And then Mime never bothers to explain, vocalize what happened either.
So. No, well, I'm wondering, was he born mute or something? Or just because of that incident, did he decide not to talk again?
I don't know. See, I'm very curious about that. I couldn't tell. I mean, either way makes sense.
And they may never explain it either.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but we did get to see that their friendship formed very young. Also in the story, we find out the reason why Batman hasn't escaped the Joker yet is because Joker's used some toxins to paralyze him.
Yeah.
And he's basically just hauling him around in a wheelchair. What I thought it was funny is when Joker showed up at that villains meeting, the one that's led by the Riddler, the villains don't believe it's actually Batman because he's done this kind of thing before. It's kind of like the boy who cried wolf.
Yeah.
They just think it's another fake Batman. Oh, he just dressed up another guard from Arkham Asylum as Batman.
Yep.
So I do find the League of Villainy was kind of a funny name.
Yes, and also having the Riddler in his like old school suit was fun.
Yeah.
The other thing that was really interesting that was sort of set up in the comic itself and then was sort of resolved in the text backup feature was the idea that we've seen throughout this of the secret government program creating these superheroes, and they suspect that, what was his name, Typhoon, I think, was actually a government agent. At least that's what Killer Frost said that he was, and he was then denying it, and he's ultimately killed by the comedian who shows up trying to hunt down the Marionette and Mime. But then you get the backup text confirms that he was indeed a government agent and was indeed planted by the U.S. government as a villain.
Huh, interesting. At the end of this issue, we see the Joker takes out Comedian with one of his prank buzzer things. Marionette mentions that the Comedian might lead them to Dr. Manhattan, and this intrigued the Joker, only because he needs a new dentist.
there was such good writing in this. Like, it was just, I mean, it was one of those things where the story was very dark, but it also had like enough moments of levity where it wasn't just this slog. Like the whole interaction when the Mr. Freeze goons get lost and then they're basically forced by the Joker to join his gang by getting tattoos.
Yeah.
That whole thing was like, it was dark, but it was really funny. And then the Joker showing back up at the end, like there was definitely, it was not a feel good comic by any means, but there was still, I think, a lot of points where you can get a good chuckle too.
Yeah. And honestly, the story didn't really move along that much, but we got a lot of backstory on this.
I mean, the story has really not moved that much at all this entire time. I mean, I would say if you could level a criticism against it so far, it's that really not a whole lot has happened. But it's been so good. I'm not even upset about it, just because they're all like he is telling stories. Like, each comic is, I will say, it never felt like a comic was a waste of time, but it never felt like they also were, there was any momentum. It was almost like we're just getting these sort of standalone stories that are all really good, but there's no kind of forward momentum with the story.
Yeah, but we know it's all building towards something. They're just,
exactly,
it's just taking his time getting there.
And it is a 12-issue series, so I mean, it's not like we're up against the, like, if this was a normal miniseries, you know, time would be running out, but it's not. And I, and all of these backstories have been so good. Like, I just really enjoyed them.
Right. And this is issue number 6. We're halfway through. One of the other things I have to mention is the artwork in this was awesome. You'd have pictures of Marionette with her, you know, with a look on her face, and as a child, and you'd see that same look as an adult. I just thought some of the stuff mirrored each other really good in this.
I mean,
the artist did a great job.
Gary Frank is awesome. I mean, he's a very, very good artist. And I also, I don't think it's a coincidence that you're seeing things like that, because they are, both John's writing and Frank's artwork, they're clearly taking notes from the way, not just the story of Watchmen, but the way Watchmen was actually presented as a comic. You can see a lot of those influences. So, like, the stuff that Gibbons was doing as a writer, where you have those sorts of reflections almost, I'm not surprised in the slightest that Frank would incorporate that into his artwork.
I thought this issue was really good.
Yeah, this might have been my favorite so far for Doomsday Clock, just because Marionette's story in particular was just so interesting. And then you also got, I thought, the most engaging in the present, because like a lot of the backstories have all been really interesting, and it's been mostly the present that's not really had a lot happening. This is the one where, I mean, still not a ton happened, but enough happened, and it was so engaging in its own right. I thought this was the most complete issue for me.
All right, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do more comics talk.
Haven't been listening to the RevCast? Here's what you're missing.
The sharks have an economy based on gold?
Apparently.
You have a shark, like, decked out like Mr. T with the bling all over.
Oh, now I want to see that. I want somebody to draw a picture of a shark with a mohawk. I pity the fool.
I'm done. The RevCast by RevolutionSF.com. Available at RevolutionSF.com, iTunes, and part of the ESO Network.
And we're back. Let's talk Flash number 51. So, I thought this was a nice wrap-up to the Flash War. We get a Wally West story from the point of view of Iris West. And it's kind of a recap of Wally's life and kind of a sending off for him.
Yeah, and the thing I thought I liked, so it, like you said, it's from Iris's perspective, but it felt like it was also a little bit from the fan base's perspective. Because there's at least a certain point when it's talking about his career as the Flash, you really, it's sort of breaking the fourth wall in an instance where it's talking about this was people's Flash that they grew up with, and that those people that grew up with him as their Flash, they still remember him as their Flash. You know what I mean? It felt like that was sort of less talking about within that world and more, you know, people who people my age. When I grew up, Wally West was my Flash, and so I still kind of view him as the Flash a lot of the time. So I liked what they were doing with that.
I have to agree with you on that. I was listening to another DC podcast today. They were talking about Flash number 50, and one of the co-hosts on there stated that very fact, that he grew up with the Wally West Flash, not the Barry Flash, and for him that was his Flash. So I have to agree with you on that point.
This was cool. And then I think I loved that whole homage to Wally. I think the most interesting thing that happens in this comic is the end, when Wally finally stops. So he's running, trying to find his family. But really, as the comic, you know, eventually gets to, he's really running because it's his only way to kind of hide. Like, he's running from his feelings. And as soon as he stops, it sort of hits him. And so he gets taken away to the sanctuary.
Which is going to be one of Tom King's stories. I'm wondering if this is going to be the first character he talks about in his sanctuary storyline.
I was already sold on that story, but like this made me want to read it even more. So I'm like, ooh, Wally's gonna be in it and Booster. Ooh, like I am very, very intrigued by this story. Like I really can't wait for it to come out, just because I don't really know what to expect from it, and so I just want to read it just to see like what's even going on with this.
It kind of wrapped up what's been going on since the beginning of Rebirth, I think, in with the Flash. We see Barry and Wally make up, you know.
Barry and Wallace break up.
Yeah, Barry and Wallace break up. Of course, we know Kid Flash is going to the new Teen Titans team, which we'll be talking about later this episode. But it kind of wrapped up what's been going on. And, of course, they didn't show us Impulse, but I have a feeling he's going to show up next issue. I don't know what your feeling is on that.
I would think so, but we also, Jay Garrick showed up at one point. It's been almost a year.
Well, right? that was during the Button storyline, and I'm expecting him not to show up again until Doomsday Clock, either during Doomsday Clock or after Doomsday Clock's over.
Yeah, I agree with you. But that's the only thing where, like, I would be like, yeah, I mean, I would assume Impulse is going to show up shortly, but I also didn't think it was going to be a year until we saw Jay Garrick either.
I don't know.
So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, we know the JSA is not back yet. So, or they're, yeah, they're kind of, they may sort of be back, but they're not back. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Teen Titans number 20. Imagine that. I put it right after this Flash issue for some reason.
A thing I thought was odd with this comic was that it kind of went through at least to some of the characters, the recruiting process, which I know we didn't see last issue. It was more like events that led them all to wanting to be on this team. But it almost felt superfluous on a certain level. I know that we didn't see Robin recruit them, but like, did we need to? I felt like just seeing the events that led them to want to be on this team was enough for me.
It was enough for me too. I mean, we saw a little bit of it last issue with Robin, Kid Flash, and I can't remember if Red Arrow was in that episode or not.
Yeah, she was. Yeah,
yeah, she was. Okay.
The incident with her mom was kind of the one that pushed her over the edge.
Right, that's right. So we got the last story, we had the three characters we already knew about. This one kind of introduced the ones we hadn't. So
it spent the least amount of time on the new ones, too. That was the thing. It was like, this seems like I would have... this seemed like the issue to focus more on the new guys.
Yeah, I guess you would have thought. They kind of focused on everybody a little bit. Not really... They didn't really focus on one character a bunch other than Robin, I think. Let's talk about the new characters real quick. So we have Robin, the leader. You have Kid Flash, Crush, who's the daughter of Lobo. You have Red Arrow, Roundhouse, who seemed to be kind of a jokester.
And a YouTube star.
And a...
Or whatever they call it.
Beautube. No one gets sued here. Beautube.
Yes.
So he was kind of a jokester character. And we had a character named Dijin, which seemed like a Raven character to me.
Yeah, definitely a magic base. They seemed to hint that she was extremely powerful.
Yeah.
And it seemed like that, like much like Raven, that there was some sort of evil male figure in that she was trying to hide from, similar to Trigon. So yeah, I would say there was some heavy Raven inspiration going on there.
Now, when I was reading this story, I was like, these all felt like they were stereotyped. I don't know if you got that sense while you're reading it or not.
I mean, yeah. It felt like they were trying to, you know, have your typical roles. I don't know. It didn't bother me. It didn't strike me as a very, like, extremely creative, but it wasn't terrible either, I guess.
I don't know. It felt more like they were slapping it in my face kind of thing when I read it.
Oh, okay. That's fair. That's fair. I won't argue that.
I'm like, okay, these are stereotypical characters. Okay. What I found interesting was the new philosophy. Robin states, "We're done waiting for villains to commit crimes. We hunt the criminals down before they can even make a move. And then we end them for good." I'm like,
but they don't this do that. Is, so that was, I will say, the last issue we read seemed to be very clearly arguing for a lethal team. And this isn't. And I thought that was the thing that I thought was what was odd, was that it turns out by the end of this comic, Robin is really just throwing these guys in a cell dungeon. To rot.
Yeah.
Yeah, dungeon. Yeah, literally like a dungeon. Which is not great, obviously, but that's a massive difference between a lethal team and this, which, yes, they are more, I would say, aggressive than a normal Teen Titans team, but it almost borders on false advertising to me with the previous issue.
Yeah, because I was pretty sure, didn't Robin kill in the last issue?
He didn't. That was it made it seem like he did, but he did not.
He did not. Okay.
Is it made it seem like he shot and killed Black's Mask, and he didn't? At the end, we see Black Mask is already being held in that dungeon.
That is true. Now, I know they're not going through due process, but at least that gives me a sense of relief that Robin's not killing. We're not going to have Batman showing up and going, you know, stopping him because he's killing criminals. He is keeping the secret that he's keeping him in the dungeon, which I'm sure we're going to see the fallout of something later down the
line. You know they're all going to break out, yeah.
Yeah. So, and also thought it was kind of funny that their new HQ is in a juvenile delinquent facility. That Damian's taken completely off the grid because he made a false report about it.
I will, I'll go off of something. So you were saying that it felt like a lot of like the characterization was slapping you in the face. For me, I thought there was too many storylines that were like telegraphing what, like, hey, reader, in case you couldn't pick up on it, this is going to be one of our story arcs, or hey, this is going to be one of our story arcs. Like when the genie girl not so subtly references this other powerful being, oh, guess what the storyline is going to be? That person. And then referencing the mystery behind what happened to these people that Lobo's daughter knows, that's a storyline. The guys escaping out of the dungeon, I can't remember, there was one other one, and it was all like just like really obvious, like, hey, guess what, this is the storylines we're gonna do. I don't know, there was just not a lot of subtlety with the writing. It was all just sort of ham-fisted to me.
Now, do you think, even though this is a darker type of Teen Titans, do you think this is geared for a younger age than us?
I do, but I don't think it's working, if that makes sense. I think in theory, yes, the idea is that yes, this is appealing, is meant to be for teenagers, but I don't think it's gonna work. I'm not gonna lie. I can't imagine. I run a comic book club at the middle school that I teach at. I cannot imagine the kids that are at my club enjoying this title that much. It's just not the kind of books that are really successful with middle school age kids. Like if you look over at Marvel, like Squirrel Girl and Miss Marvel, those are the ones that are really popular. Those are nothing like this Teen Titans story. And I'm not saying that as a blanket statement that no teenager would like this, but I don't think it's going to have the widespread success that I think they are hoping it will have.
So yeah, I just wasn't sure about this story.
I am very glad that this is not a lethal Teen Titans team, but in a weird way, this story is almost less intriguing with the path that they took. You know what I mean? Like, you can either do traditional Teen Titans, or you can do this like hardcore lethal Teen Titans, which I don't think is true to the characters, but is at least a very new creative direction to go. And instead, they sort of pick this half-baked option. You know what I mean? I don't really think either side wins that way. You just sort of get this muddled mess.
I think it's going to depend on what the next story arc is going to be like, I think.
I actually really like a lot of the characters that they introduced in the roster. I don't think this title is going to work unless they have a different writer on it. I'm just going to, that's just my opinion. My takeaway from these first two issues is that the idea could potentially work. I do actually like the roster. I just don't think it's going to work with this writer, but I could be wrong.
All right. I guess we'll have to wait and see about that. All right. Let's move on to our last title for this week, The Terrifics number 6. So, right out of the gate, I'm going to say it. We get DC's version of Dr. Doom. Dr. Dredd's here.
Oh, man. Unless he's a character that goes along with, what's the guy's name? Tom Terrific? Is that?
Tom Strong.
Tom Strong. Combining the things. Unless he's a character that has traditionally gone with Tom Strong, which I admit I have no idea. Gentlemen's not being very subtle.
No, he is not.
And I don't mind in the slightest. This is unabashedly a Fantastic Four book, and so I'm fine with it.
Oh, man. Well, I'm wondering if Lemire did this, because for a while there, Fantastic Four was off the table at Marvel.
Yeah.
So maybe he wanted to have a Fantastic Four book, so he pitched this to DC. I mean, I love it.
We talked about this when they got Lemire back. I was very surprised, just because I thought that if the last that I had seen in his interactions with DC, they had burned that bridge. Like, he was not going to go back there. I almost wonder if this was one of the carrots on the stick that they used to bring him back. That's sort of like, we'll let you do Fantastic Four.
That could very well. I'm loving this title. As soon as I saw Dr. Dredd, I was like, oh, they're doing Dr. Doom. I love it. I just love it. I love this title. It's fun.
And the way they gave his speech bubbles were that green color. It was, oh, man, hilarious. I think the thing I liked about it, too, is that it was very knowing. Like, it wasn't like the book was trying to act like this wasn't Dr. Doom. You know what I mean? Like, it was a sort of a winking going on. Like, yeah, we know. But we know that you're interested in it, too.
So I love this issue. Basically, Dr. Dredd's been behind this whole Terrifics thing so far. And his goal is to kill Tom Strong. I don't know what his issue with Tom Strong is. I've never read this Tom Strong comic. I don't know anything about the character, but I'm intrigued to find out why he's interested in killing Tom Strong and who Tom Strong is. We see Metamorpho get changed back to human in this. I just love this issue.
Yeah, it's I'm a huge fan of the series, both of us. We've not been subtle in our enjoyment of the Terrifics so far.
Now, I don't remember noticing it in some of the other issues. I'd have to go back and look at them, but I noticed in this issue most of the pages were four panels. We had a lot of four panel pages, a few two panel pages, a few one page just one pages. I think there was only 2-3 page panels, but we didn't have anything that was more than four panels on a page. I thought it made the issue feel more epic.
Yeah, that's a good catch. I didn't notice that. That's cool.
So I can, like I said, I don't remember if any of the other Terrific issues were like that, but this one definitely was. And I just thought, when I was looking at it, I was like, man, it makes it feel more epic. This issue felt the most epic out of all of them so far, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that goes along with the story, too. This is sort of the big, first real big fight conclusion we've had. So that was nice. And I also like that this story didn't drag on that long. It's still kind of keeping in with that relatively short story arcs, which I just think this title, that's what's best suited for it. Man, it's such a fun comic. Plastic Man is always the highlight for me because they just use him really well. I'm not going to lie, I'm going to miss Metamorpho Dog.
Yeah, Metamorpho Dog was cool.
I was really hoping that he was going to be just a permanent addition. It's like a little kind of mascot. It really not a big deal at all, but I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, maybe they'll get something different that's kind of like that. Maybe they'll end up getting a robot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love this issue. Forward to more Terrifics, that's for sure.
I agree, and I said this before, but I'm thrilled that it's part of their Walmart marketing as well, just because I would love for this title to really catch on and this be a team that ideally, Lemire stays and writes this for a long time. But, I mean, you never know. And I would love for this title to continue with someone else, even if he stops.
Yeah, me too. All right. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
Yeah, I actually have a couple. My Read More Comics recommendation for this week, I mentioned it earlier in the podcast, but Justice League Dark, there was the New 52 series. In my opinion, the highlight of that is Volumes 2 and 3, which were by Jeff Lemire, who's writing the Terrifics right now. That particular iteration of the team had Zatanna and Deadman and Constantine is sort of like the magical trinity. That to me was the highlight of that run. There was a volume beforehand and there was like two or three after it, but by far the best Justice League Dark stories were that run. And if you're looking for maybe some other things, that if you liked this Justice League Dark, you're intrigued by the concept of a Justice League Dark, that's what I would recommend. The other thing I wanted to mention, this is not DC related, but I've been laughing all day about this. So have you seen the last trailer for Venom?
No, I have not. I saw that they posted it, but I hadn't watched it yet.
There is a line in this, and I just have to shout out about it because it's the dumbest line I've ever heard from a superhero movie. And I've seen some really terrible superhero movies. Venom at one point is threatening a criminal that he's going to like dismember him, so there's basically none of his limbs are left, and he'll be rolling in the street like a turd in the wind.
Oh jeez,
it's the worst line I've ever heard, and it's hard to understand. Like, Venom in the trailer is very hard to understand, except for that you can clearly hear a turd in the wind, and it is so
I'm going to have to watch that now to see that.
I recommend the trailer. There's some really cool stuff in the trailer, too. Don't get me wrong. I'm not hating on the movie, but like, that line is so deliciously dumb. I love it. I love it. It's so dumb.
I sure hope we get a Spider-Man cameo in that movie.
Maybe he can be running alongside the turd in the wind.
Oh, man. All right, well, I want to shout out about Teen Titans 100 Page Giant number 1, because I finally got my hands on one. Finally, after going to Walmart to Walmart to Walmart, anytime I was near a Walmart, I'd stop in just to see if they had it. And I went to so many Walmarts looking for this thing, and I finally found it. And you know what's funny? Right after I found it, I ended up near the Walmart near my work. They have two copies of it now. So now I'm wondering if it's starting to be more widespread, or if they've got printed more copies or something.
They must have done another printing.
I can tell you now, if you guys are looking for the 100 page giants, I've been seeing most of them in all the Walmarts I've been going in lately that are carrying them. So if you've been having problems finding them, go back and check your Walmart, because I've been able to find every issue of everything now, so which is good.
I think, and I've been reading a little bit on this, that the initial printing might have been a little bit low, because twofold, DC wasn't sure and Walmart wasn't sure if this would succeed, but also, if it does succeed, selling out makes it look really good. Now Walmart's like, oh, this is something we got to get more of. So you know what I mean? So I think it was sort of that twofold of like, we don't know if this is going to work. And also, if we sell low and it does work, and then it looks even better because we sold out. I would not be surprised if that was part of why we're now getting more, because the initial launch was successful to a certain degree. And so now we're getting they're churning out more copies of it.
Right, and we should be getting Superman number 2 and I believe Justice League number 2 either coming out. It's either supposed to be coming out this week or next week. They said the first week of August. I don't know if that means the partial week or the full week. So be looking for them to come out either sometime this week or next week. And then Batman number 2, Teen Titans number 2 is supposed to be out 2 weeks after that, so I'm looking forward to getting the second issues and reading them. It's fun reading the original stories and reading some of the reprints in here that I haven't read before. I know some of them I've read already, like The Terrifics, which actually I reread because it's just a fun title. I know, I'm having a blast reading. They're just fun. I'm glad DC is putting these out because I think it'll bring in more readers, at least collecting these issues at the least. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, if you'd like to give us feedback on anything we've talked about, you can leave us a message on our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Next week, we're going to be talking Adventures of the Super Sons number 1, which I'm very excited about. It looks like we are going to be getting the Super Sons, not the current Super Sons right now, but this is going to be like a backstory of the Super Sons before Robin took over the new Teen Titans. We're going to be getting Batman number 52, Deathstroke number 34, Justice League number 5, Mr. Miracle number 10, and, because Cletus doesn't know this yet, but we're going to be talking about our top 5 favorite DC villains.
Mm.
So, give us your list, guys, just like we did with the DC shows. Give us your top 5 favorite DC villains, and we'll read them up on the show next week.
Man, that's going to be hard to pick just 5. I love my DC villains.
I know. But it'll be interesting to see what you and I, what your and I's top 5 picks are. And I've already, I've already done my picks and my reasons why. So I'm a little ahead of the game. Sorry, I came up with that idea today and I got it done.
That's a great idea. I'm already excited about it. I'm already thinking about it right now.
So, and who knows? It's possible I could change my list a little bit because I was kind of deciding, what I thought mine were. But I'm looking very forward to talking about that next week. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the T Public store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.